can really see Lara struggle. And it's about 6 yards over the fence for Lara.
Well, I don't think he's only bowling short. I think he's bowling rubbish. He's bowling like my Auntie Annie when she'd had too much sherry to drink.
How about that? Absolutely brilliant from Shane Warne.
Brilliant Yorker. Absolutely brilliant. Malinga with six.
Yet another 50 by Sachin Tendulkar. He'll raise his bat.
There it is. 500 for Davis and a 500 for England.
Short.
For 15 best bowling figures on this ground.
That'll get there. Joe Root has gone to 100 here at Trent Bridge.
You are listening to Sticky Wicket on URN Sport.
Hello and welcome to the first edition of Sticky Wicket in the calendar year 2017-2018, the first of this academic year. And yeah, it's that time of year again. We are watching England away in a foreign land, losing sleep, and also we're losing test matches again. And we're going to go through the first test match at Brisbane. Today I'm joined by Matt and Ollie. Welcome to you. I think you're both new to URN as well, so welcome to you guys. And yeah, we'll go through the cricket. And we're going to start with Ben Stokes. What's your opinion on why he isn't there?
Well, quite simply, he's under police investigation and England can't afford to take somebody who's in this sort of disciplinary nature on tour with them. I mean, imagine if the police decided to charge him in the middle of a test match and they'd have to take him out of the match. That'd be awful. I believe Stokes has now gone to New Zealand, actually, to play some cricket. And so he's, I believe he's waiting in the wings if he's cleared. So, but I don't think there's a real timescale as to when we know if he's going to be charged or not with this incident. But I'm imagining that we'll find out at some point in the next few months. And obviously we won't know the true details of what happened until he's either charged or not charged.
I think the ECB have obviously made the correct decision in banning Ben Stokes for now. I think the only problem is that this has been very frustrating for English cricket, because Ben Stokes has been one of the best players in the world for a while now. He's probably, without a doubt, the best all-rounder in the world. This has had a very negative effect on English cricket. One thing I will say is I do like the sort of intent that Ben Stokes has gone about things. I like the fact that he's gone to play cricket in New Zealand. I think it is to keep himself fit in case he does eventually get cleared and is ready for selection.
I mean, I think Ben Stokes' quality as a cricketer has never been in doubt, but he has had an issue with disciplinary records in the past. I think he broke his hand when he punched a locker in the West Indies once. So I think he really needs to perhaps look into getting some help in dealing with these issues off the field, with this recurring incident. And if this is happening over and over again, it's something he needs to address if he wants to prolong his career as a top-level cricketer.
We're joined in the studio as well by Joe now. He's just come in, a late arrival. But yeah, can I get your opinion on Ben Stokes then? What do you think?
Yeah, talking of late arrivals.
yeah.
I mean, for me, he's a maverick, and that reflects in his batting and his bowling. And he's a match winner, and those sort of players are special, and you have to take the rough with the smooth. And if there is an aggressive side to his personality, then we need to utilise that, and we don't need to necessarily banish him all the way to New Zealand just for the sake of making a point. If he's clear to travel to New Zealand, as far as the police and the authorities are concerned, then he's clear to travel to Australia. And even if we don't want him to play because there's a chance he could be called back by the courts and move the match, I still think we'd benefit from having his presence with the team. The gathered performance lacked that element of spirit. It lacks a bit of fight and resolve in the last couple of sessions. And personally, he was until very recently a vice-captain, and he should be with the team.
I mean, I appreciate that Ben Stokes is a phenomenal cricketer. I mean, it's a real shame he's not there. But quite simply, what image does it send out to take a man on tour with you who's under police investigation and is essentially accused of potentially doing a really serious crime and causing actual bodily harm?
But isn't it innocent until proven guilty? A lot of other people in their general life can continue with their jobs.
It is, but it sets a dangerous precedent.
Is it just, do you think it's just because he's a top sportsman that we can't take him?
I think it doesn't matter if it was a member of the backroom staff or whoever. It doesn't matter who you are in England setup. You can't go if you're under police investigation, in my opinion.
I think this sort of feisty attitude is exactly what England need, though. I think in order to deal with the sort of constant taunting you're going to get down under, Ben Stokes is the perfect man to have in that dressing room.
If the tour last time,
I think Ben Stokes was arguably like the best player on tour. He dealt with the pressure the best. I think he's the sort of person who's going to exactly. Yeah, that was sort of kickstarted his Test career, didn't it? So yeah, I think he's a massive loss. I think he would have been the perfect man for the dressing room, and I think, like you said, he's innocent until proven guilty. I think if you take into account sort of the Johnny Bairstow incident at the minute and the fact that he's still probably going to carry on playing, I think Ben Stokes can probably feel slightly hard done by.
And David Warner, the Australian vice captain, talisman, he himself punched Joe Root not too long ago, so there is an element of hypocrisy here.
So yeah, I think there's a real mix of opinions in the studio about whether Ben Stokes should be there, as I know there is across the wide public watching England at the moment. But we're going to move on to the actual squad that England picked. And in the absence of Ben Stokes, do we think we have any real match winners in this squad who've come in? Do we have anyone really who can pick a match by the scruff of its neck and win it?
I think Stuart Broad can have his moments. We've seen him have some devastating spells over the years. I remember, I think he got 5-1 against South Africa. Obviously, the 8-15 against Australia. So I think Stuart Broad in his day can blow a team away. It tends to happen once in a blue moon. You might get it once a year. But if that happened, I think he has the potential to potentially knock over the Aussies. In terms of the batting, I can imagine Joe Root scoring a big 100. Alistair Cook seems out of form, so that's unlikely. But yeah, I would say Joe Root and Stuart Broad are the two men for me who are only real match winners. I think the rest of the squad is quite simply okay cricketers, and I think there have been some bigger missions, but I'm sure I'll go into those later.
Yeah, I mean, echoing the points about Root and Broad, they're both established test match players who aren't too different to Australian conditions. The other ones, though, it's hard to see winners in Australia. I mean, Ali and Anderson are both terrific cricketers, but the skill set required when you're playing on hard, fast banging pitches is very different to what it might be at a place like Trent Bridge. So in that respect, it is concerning. We lack that Ben Stokes, or as the Australians have, someone like Steve Smith or Pat Cummings, who can really change a match in a session.
I think in the absence of Ben Stokes, I think the importance of, I think Moeen Ali is probably going to be incredibly important. I think he is a match winner on his day. I think after Ben Stokes, you'd probably class him as one of the best all-rounders in the world. I think he actually posts a higher batting average than Stokes, and I think we've already seen in the first test how much spin's going to play a part. So yeah, I really do think Moeen Ali could play a big part. I think he was disappointing in the first test, but in future test matches, he could be England's most pivotal player.
So looking at the rest of the squad as well, there's a few fringe players who I'm sure lots of people are not sure about, like Gary Ballance coming back in, James Vince coming back in even though he did well in the first test, Milan keeping his place but Westley not, and also looking at the Somerset players, like Craig Overton, and maybe Jack Leach being omitted for Mason Crane. What are you guys feeling about these fringe players? Do you reckon these were the right calls?
Well, as a Somerset fan, I am disgusted that Jack Leach is not there. He's quite simply the best spinner in the country. There's no two ways about it. The man has taken 110 wickets at 21 over the last 2 years, and he's not in the squad. And then as a young leg spinner, he played about 3 first-class games for Hampshire. It's bonkers. And I personally think it's partly because he plays for Somerset. If he played for Surrey, I'm sure he would have been in the team. And it just makes no sense. I've watched him bowl probably 6 or 7 times in the last 2 years, and every time I think this is a man with control and also the ability to take wickets, and he's just what you need in Australia, where the spinners might win the match every time, but you can get control. Mason Crane will not provide you with control in Australia. Yes, he might pick up a couple of wickets, but he'll also go about 4.5 and over, and that's not what you want. Jack Leach would pick up a couple of wickets, but he'd also go more like 2.5 and over, which is much more what you want in Australia.
So sticking with the bowlers as well, what about Jake Ball and Craig Overton? Are they the right picks?
I'm not necessarily opposed to Jake Ball's inclusion. I think he did all right in the first test. I think he's clearly one of England's fastest bowlers. I obviously would have liked to see Mark Wood, but he's obviously been suffering with injuries and stuff, hasn't he? Yeah, so hopefully, I mean, if he gets fit, he could be sort of in the squad by the end of the series. So yeah, I'm not opposed to Jake Ball's inclusion. Craig Overton was one that really surprised me, though, because I think the selectors came out and said themselves that they weren't planning on picking anyone who hadn't previously had test match experience. So in that sense, you could have understood the exclusions of the likes of Jack Leach. Yeah, but when I saw Craig Overton's name announced there, I was really surprised. So yeah, we'll have to see how he does. I can't really see him getting a game above any of the current lot, but yeah, we'll have to see.
You've got a feel for Liam Plunkett, haven't you?
That's what I was going to say.
I mean, he's a fast bowler. He's proven at international level, maybe not test match level, but certainly T20s and one day matches, and so players like Craig Overton, Tom Curran being selected ahead of him. Yes, maybe we want to build for the future, but actually, first and foremost, let's win an Ashes series.
Let's try not to lose 5-0.
Exactly, and the players who are best equipped to doing that are, in my opinion, someone like Liam Plunkett and someone like Jack Leach, who can control an end, hold up an end, while the seamers rotate up the other side. And we sort of gather, we are playing effectively without a spinner. Whether it's a technical flaw, whether it is just this injury versus side strain, now a finger injury for Mo Inalu, we weren't able to have a dominant spinner in that match. We lacked it, especially when you looked at Nathan Lyon's bowling statistics. It was a big difference between the two sides. So call up Jack Leach. He's playing at the moment in Queensland for the Lions, and have Liam Plunkett on standby because we need a bowler with variation, with variety. We don't have anyone like that at the moment. As good as Jake Ball is at County Championship level, he hasn't done it yet at any international level as far as I'm concerned, and I think this is a step too far for him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Craig Overton bowl quite a few times in the last few years, and I think in 2 years' time, he will be a test bowler. I don't think he's quite there yet. I think he has the potential to be a very good test bowler, but he's not quite at that level yet. I agree that Liam Plunkett should have gone. I think we talked about Stokes having a bit of feistiness. I think Plunkett's got a bit about him as well. He hits the deck hard. He can definitely hold up a bat, and he's got a bit about him in his character. He also brings a lot in the field as well. Very good fielder. We've seen him taking some great catches over the last couple of years.
He's a handy batsman too, as well.
Exactly. I mean, we all remember him that 6-1 to tidy ODI against Sri Lanka. He can score runs. He's got a test experience. I think he should have gone. Obviously, it's a shame Mark Wood's not on the team. He's got a bit of X Factor as well. I love watching him bowl. I think he's fantastic. I don't think Jake Ball should have played in the first test, partly because he was still coming back from that ankle injury. I think that hindered his performance to an extent.
And it didn't help that Wokes couldn't seem to find any reverse swing or any really form of pace and bounce.
No, that was a shame, considering he'd had a decent run in the warm-up matches as well.
And the suggestion is that Wood will come in Perth if he proves his fitness in the current 12-a-side Lions match, which means that they are looking to drop one of Ball or Wokes if they can.
I think so. They'd probably drop Curran when he's in the squad as well.
I
personally think that Jake Ball is completely out of his depth at Test match level, and I don't think he should have been picked. But yeah, we're going to move on to the batsman now as well, and we're going to go back to Gary Balance. Why has he been recalled again?
There's no batting crisis that Balance can't make worse, is it? Let's be honest. It's like banging your head against a brick wall with Balance, because it's the same dismissal every time. It goes back to County Championship, where the bowlers are pretty average. He scores runs, comes into the Test team, the bowlers are better, and he gets exposed yet again. I don't see why, for the bowlers, they have to say, we're looking to build to a future, we're going to give these people experience, and we're not going to revert to someone like Plunkett. Whereas with the batsmen, they say, hold on, we'll go back, we'll try again. When actually, they could have brought in a young batsman if they really had these deep-held views.
They could have continued with Wesley and given him a chance. I know he had a chance in the summer, but...
I saw Wesley's first innings at the Oval, I was there, and I remember saying to people, I thought he was quite good in that innings. I was thinking, this guy looks comfortable, he looked assured, and it was a bit of a shame that everything went downhill after that, and they didn't really give him that much of a run, which I think is a bit unfair. In terms of our batting, I personally really like Stoneman. I think he's the best opening option we've had for a little bit. I think he looks really solid, secure. But then he might well get dropped. I mean, last time I thought Michael Carberry was really hard done by getting dropped. I thought he scored a few 50s in that series, didn't he, against Mitchell Johnson. He played quite well. So hopefully we'll see him through. The jury's still out on Vince for me. I think he scored that 83, but I need to see him do it more consistently and have maintained the discipline he showed in that innings.
And it's Ben Stokes' sparring partner, Alex Hales, who could shore up middle order. I mean, when we were set at 240 for four, going into the second session on day two, the game was set for someone who could come and score quick runs, take the game from the Australians, and we didn't have that presence in our batting lineup.
Isn't he banned from playing for England, though? Isn't he still banned?
He's also banned,
they
I think.
Can do that retrospectively, though, I've heard, so they can backdate, because he's missed one test in 2 1 days.
Also, I mean, Mo Inalu and Johnny Bairstow can score relatively quickly on their day. I don't know. I think England players' heads tend to go a bit when they go to Australia, and we never really know why. It's the same with the England football team at the World Cup. But it's like they land in Australia and they decide that they can't play cricket anymore.
Going back to the Gary Balance today, though. I honestly think one of the only reasons he's in the team is because he's a Yorkshire player and he's a mate of Joe Root's.
Absolutely.
That's a Lancastrian, I'd definitely say that.
That's what I've heard. We've already seen that he's had four or five chances to prove himself. Now, I think the real problem with Gary Balance is his refusal to change his technique. I mean, you saw the likes of Johnny Bairstow when he first made the step up to Test Match cricket. His technique...
He kept on getting bowled over there, didn't he?
Yeah, his technique was seemingly lacking, but he went back to county cricket. He was willing to change his technique. He's come back and he's one of the best batsmen in the world. He's probably the best wicketkeeper batsman in the world right now. Whereas Gary Balance refuses to change his technique. I think in Australia, of all places, his technique is going to be found wanting the most. Yes, I really, really can't understand that inclusion. I agree that Alex Hales probably should have been picked, although obviously with the whole Ben Stokes saga, maybe not the right time. Another player who I really liked was Liam Livingston for Lancashire.
Yeah, he's a good batsman.
Yeah, obviously he hasn't had that much Test match experience, but he's played a lot for the Lions. I think he's done very well for the Lions. I think he's a sort of a similar mould to Alex Hales in the sense that he likes to score quickly. He's quite a flashy player, and like we touched upon in that second session of the second day when we really needed someone to push on, I think he really could have been someone who could have done that.
I mean, I think Ollie makes a really good point. We've been talking about the sort of X factor that some players have, like Plunkett and Stokes. I think Livingston might have a little bit of that about him. I was having seen him back a couple of times. He looks like the sort of guy who could really take the game apart, potentially.
Who did once score that 300 off, like 50 balls for Nantwich or something.
It was ridiculous, wasn't it?
Ridiculous. But, he might be more one for the one dayers we'll play later in the winter.
Yeah, I think he'll feature at some point. He's playing at the moment.
He's in the Lions, isn't
in
he?
In the Lions match. I mean, a dreadful first... T20 against South Africa earlier this summer. I think he dropped a catch and was out for a little more.
Maybe
than
a little too soon, maybe.
A bit too soon, but we saw Stokes came into the team on the last tour, and if we are at a situation when we're 4-0 heading into Sydney, then why not? But let's try and not think that just yet.
So it's not lost yet.
So, yeah, we've discussed the squad, and we all think that it's not the best squad we could have picked. There's a few surprise selections. So... going into the first test, we competed for 2.5 days. How surprised were we that we didn't get rolled over, considering we don't think the squad's particularly good enough? Why is that? Why are we?
I wasn't surprised, but I don't think the Australian batting lineup is that strong if you exclude sort of Steve Smith and David Warner. I mean, Usman Khawaja gets out to off spin every single time he bats against it. Bancroft looks okay, but he looks a little bit wafty outside the off stump. And Hanscom seems to keep on getting out LBW, so he's the new Shane Watson of the team. But,
get those reviews in.
Yeah. So I think if we do, quite simply, get Steve Smith out and you win the game, is very, very simple for me. And I don't think England bowled that well to him. They decide they're going to try and bore him out by bowling quite wide outside the off stump. And he's a very patient man. He just sort of waited for one to drift onto the pads, clipped it for a couple of runs here, hit a short one for four now and then. And, you know, I heard Graham Swan talking about it, and he made absolute sense. They didn't bowl straight, and you take out bowled and LBW then. And it just doesn't really make any sense. And, you know, they need to work out how to get Smith out if they're going to do well in the Ashes, I think.
To be honest, I think England's first innings batting performance really did surprise me, especially considering sort of how badly Alistair Cook and Joe Root did. And normally, sort of in recent years, it's tended to be that if Cook or Root don't do well, England sort of suffer a collapse. Yeah, but it was very, very pleasing to see a lot of these new players that have come into the side. Mark Stoneman, Dawood Malan, James Vince, all sort of justifying their inclusion. James Vince's innings in the first innings sort of really proved himself to me, because I was sort of unsure on him. I was surprised to see him back in the Test match squad, but yeah, he really did play well. Mark Stoneman, sort of, I think he performed well in both innings actually. Yeah, sort of his dismissal in the second innings was a bit soft, but he sort of battled very hard, especially especially on the end of that third day. So that was pleasing to see. The worrying things are sort of the same problems that we had in the last series down under, in the sense of these lower order batting collapses. The likes of Stuart Broad, who's tended to be an all right batsman in his Test match career, really doesn't seem to be able to play in Australia. He just hates the short ball, and they're just going to pepper him with that the entire time. I think the sort of 9, 10, 11 didn't hit double figures in the entire match. Chris Wokes also didn't bat too well, even though he's sort of considered an all rounder. So that's really worrying to see. And I think if we're going to have any chance, that's certainly going to have to be addressed. That's another reason why perhaps someone like Liam Plunkett could come in, as we've already touched upon, because he is a better batsman than the likes of Jake Ball.
Was that the difference between the two teams, the way that each tail batted? because we lost a lot of wickets cheaply in both our innings, and Australia powered on from 76 for 4 and 209 for 7 to give a first innings lead, and then from that stage you're unlikely to win a test match. Well, not unlikely, but it makes you so much harder, doesn't it?
It was a big difference, but it's indicative of wider disparity between the teams, which is the ability to bowl hard and fast, which England just don't have. Mitchell Starc is brilliant at dismissing a tail end for very few runs, just because he's scared of living daylights out of them, and he can bowl bouncer Yorker and take as many wickets as he wants doing that. But I think the point that you were making earlier about England still being in it until halfway through a test match was perhaps because Australia showed a bit too much respect. In the first innings especially, there wasn't the short stuff. I know the conditions weren't necessarily what Australia were expecting at the Gabba.
Talked about Adele ruining the pitch.
Yeah, it talks about Adele, and he made a lot of excuses just in case they lost, but once they got ahead, they were quiet soon enough. But I think they were a bit put off by the pitch and by the atmospheric conditions, and perhaps thought they should pitch it up and try and swing it. When that didn't work, they didn't show much in the first innings, which surprised me, bearing in mind they're meant to be the best bowling attack in the world. But as soon as Cook and Stoneman came out at the end of day three, it was quite obvious what was going to happen, and I think that's what will happen for the rest of the series. It'll be bounce in, and it'll be a real demonstration of how good Australia's bowling is and how frail England's batting can be.
I think our best chance is to hope that Pat Cummins breaks down. I think it would be my miracle if he goes 5 tests in a row. I mean, we might need the Glenn McGrath ball incident to go to Mitchell Starc as well. That would probably help us. So if friendly Barmy Army fans want to roll a few cricket balls across the Australian warm-up. Now, I think quite simply, we got our tactics wrong bowling to the tail end. We didn't bring in Jimmy Anderson to bowl. He was actually quite good. I know he's not fast out and out, but he's quite good at cleaning up tail enders.
He's skillful, isn't he?
Exactly. So he, you know, they can't deal with his swing, even if he doesn't swing it quite as much in Australian conditions. So we've seen him knock over the tail quite a lot in English conditions, and I think not bowling him was a big mistake, and I don't think they've perhaps coached our tail enders well enough to deal with the short stuff.
And going back to the squad omission, there's that term banded around, the enforcer, that the England team management used to like to use. But Liam Plunkett, he's the sort of man who can bowl short, isn't he? He can get into the tail enders. He could clean up a tail.
Absolutely.
Similarly to Mitchell Starc.
I think the sort of the two men in England that you think could perhaps do that are probably Mark Wood and Liam Plunkett. They're probably the out and out quicks. And actually, a real shame for me is that Tymal Mills isn't fit enough to be a test match cricketer, because if he had the ability to be in a 5-day test match, I think he could be phenomenal.
Isn't fit enough or doesn't want to be fit enough?
Well, he's got
he's got a back injury.
He's got quite a bad back injury.
He has his $1 million contract, doesn't he, which allows him to bowl 4 overs a week and take home unknown riches. You know, if he claims he's got a back injury, then perhaps we should take his word for it. But there are other bowlers, of course, who aren't on the tour. That could have been Stephen Finn being the obvious example of someone who's performed well. And I was actually looking at the papers this morning again. There's a call for Tim Bresnan to come back. We've seen him swing it round corners at the SCG before, but I think that would be a step too far.
Back as well, then.
It shows how one-dimensional our bowling attack is at the moment.
The fact that we're calling Christopher Amanu, who's been injured out of the tour, somebody who's retired and somebody who's nearly retired, to come back, shows how we're doing, I think.
I mean, why stop there? Why not have Beefy and Bob Willis while we're at it?
I think, well, judging from your opinions on Drake Bull, I think he might be a better option for you.
Yeah, definitely. He's still in shape, both of them.
I think the loss of Stephen Finn is a lot greater than sort of people have made it out to be. I think he is that sort of person who could bang it in short, pick up wickets that way. I think one of the reasons why we had so little success last time out is because Stephen Finn wasn't actually picked.
He was unselectable, wasn't he?
Yeah, because he was having problems with his bowling at that point. It is a real shame not to see Stephen Finn. Obviously, he's had a lot of international experience as well. I would have thought he was less injury-prone than Mark Wood, but that seems to be the problem with both of them at the minute, that neither of them can stay fit. And, I think it's going to be a real costly loss for England on this tour.
Are we worried about Alistair Cook's form and his head? Where's he at? Do you think he's in a good place right now for cricket?
Very, very worried, because there seems to be this argument coming from the pundits and the players that this is Alistair Cook. He gets a few small scores, then a big score. But yeah, for me,
as you can see on the screen there, he's got some. He got a big score against West Indies, didn't he? 243. And then other than that, as a one more 50 in the South Africa series. Other than that, he's not scoring very many runs in Test matches.
No, and people say, well, that's just cookie. That's what he's like. For me, that's not good enough. The role of an opener is to shore up the innings for the rest of the team and to lay a foundation which people can build on. And if you're getting out in the, you know, first bowling spell of every match, then you're not doing your job as an opener. So he either needs to dig in and find some form, or we're going to have to start a search for a brand new opener, which, you know, we still haven't finished the last search, and that's bordering on 5 or 6 years now. So it's very, very concerning. Nathan Lyon talks about wanting to put players into retirement. Well, he would be the obvious candidate, so we can only hope that under the day-night conditions, which are a bit closer to what we would normally have in England, Crick will get some runs. It was a day-night test, but he got the 2-4-3 against West Indies. So hopefully he likes a pink ball, and hopefully he can crack on, because he's a real, real liability at the moment, when he should be one of our strongest players.
I mean, Alistair Cook's dismissal in the second innings was a bit concerning for me. Getting out on the hook is not a good way for an opener to get out. And
especially him.
He's been sledged.
That's his career,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. He's been sledged. If he's going out on the hook, it means he's tried to do something uncharacteristic. So Australia's got to him.
I have faith in, partly in the sense that he's one of my favourite cricketers, and I love watching him bat. I don't know what it is, but I just love watching him grind out innings after innings. And I think he's been phenomenal for so long for England. And I really hope he can get back to his best, because, I mean, there's nothing better than watching Alistair Cook just hit his one cut shot to the boundary every 10 overs. So I really hope he does get back to his best, and I personally think he can, and I think I'm going to be very bold and say he will in this series. I think he'll score 100.
I think the real problem is that at the minute Cook and Stoneman are essentially playing the same role of just sort of staying in, trying to give the rest of the batsmen a platform, as opposed to Australia, who obviously have David Warner going out and attacking, and Bancroft sort of sitting back a bit more. And yeah, the real problem is that Cook has obviously been, for the past decade, the player that's done this better than the other opener. But in this series so far, Stoneman's been the one who sort of solidified the innings somewhat.
And in the summer, they were starting to show signs of that. Mm.
Because the problem with Cook is that he's got such good mental strength, obviously, but he'll refuse to try and score off a ball unless it's really there to be hit. And in that first test, the likes of Josh Hazlewood gave him nothing to hit. Yeah, he's not going to take the game to Australia, and if they continue to bowl well, we saw that eventually he's going to get a ball which he feels he needs to take on. He'll feel that he needs to take on that short ball, and Australia really sort of lured him into the trap. So obviously he's been around long enough to sort of get over this bad run of form, but I am worried about him, especially because obviously the last series down under he really struggled as well. Let's just hope he can replicate the success that he had in the 2010-11 series.
Another issue in our batting lineup is Johnny Bairstow too low in the order?
Well, again, without going back to the Ben Stokes point all the time, for the last few tours now and home series, it's been Stokes at 6, Bairstow 7, Moeen 8, which I was against at first, because I think Moeen's too good a batsman to be batting so low down, but they found a way to make it work. There are some great partnerships between Bairstow and Ali, but once you remove Stokes and then promote Ali above Bairstow, you do leave Bairstow very exposed. And he's the third best batsman in the team, Bairstow, after Cook and Root. And if Cook's not scoring runs, then, you know, he seems to be the de facto second best. So yeah, he's wasted down there, quite frankly. And if Wokes, Broad, Ball, Anderson are going to cower at the sight of a short ball, then Bairstow's are going to have maximum 30 deliveries in an innings. And what can you do with that? As soon as you've got yourself in, you're marooned.
There was an argument to say we should get another wicketkeeper in, i.e. Ben Foulkes. He's the one in the squad. Debatable call that as well. But yeah, he's the keeper in the squad. He comes into 7 and Bairstow moves up to 5. We take out Vince, Milan or Stoneman, one of those batsmen, to create space for him. Because he, as you say, probably is one of the best three batsmen in the team.
Well,
do you reckon that could work?
Yeah, if Milan or Vince has struggled in the first match, then those calls would probably be louder by now. But they've done enough, both of them scoring 50s, to keep their spots for probably the next two test matches. But it's not a bad idea bringing in someone like Foulkes. Whether he is the second best wicketkeeper in the country is another matter, because there's a man called Joss Butler who has done quite well when he's been called upon for England in the past. He would be aggrieved not to get that call up.
Well, he hasn't played a first class game in donkey's years, has he, Butler?
He struggled for Lancashire this year.
He played one or two games and didn't get any runs, didn't he? So I think, I don't know if he's quite in the right mental space.
I mean,
to be
Tim Payne hasn't scored a century since we've been alive. Yeah, really,
I didn't say it was a good selection. I didn't say Tim Payne was a good selection.
Well, Tim Payne was actually playing for my local club a couple of years ago. I mean, I'm from Banbury, and I think his wife got a job over in England, and he went off and played for Banbury. And as you said, he hadn't scored a century in donkey's years, so I can't believe that he was in the squad.
How was he for Banbury?
I mean, he was a great player. He was obviously a Banbury sort of semi-professional team. But still, yeah, to see him in the Australia squad now is mind-blowing. He is obviously an incredible wicketkeeper, though. He's obviously not in the team for his batting, and that sort of raises the point that you said about Ben Foulkes. Maybe we do need a specialist wicketkeeper, because obviously Johnny Bairstow's improved, but he's still not an exceptional wicketkeeper. Maybe if Ben Foulkes came into the team, that would give Johnny Bairstow the chance to solely focus on his batting. We could move him up the order, and that could have a positive effect. I think going back to Mo and Ali, though, and where he should be batting in the order, I do think six is too high for him. I think he's too much of a... I don't think he's a consistent enough player to bat at number six. He could either come in, sort of take the game to Australia, score a quick 50, or he could give his wicket away very, very cheaply. I think Johnny Bairstow's a much more reliable player, and if we do lose a few quick wickets, like we did in that second session. I think if Johnny Bairstow had come in ahead of Mo and Ali... that sort of may have prevented the inevitable batting collapse from happening.
Well, I personally would have Johnny Bairstow at 5 and Milan at 6 and Ali at 7. In my opinion, I think that's the best option. And obviously, you think, ooh, specialist batsman at 6 and wicketkeeper at 5, but I think quite simply, as you said...
He's not just a wicketkeeper.
No, he's a fantastic batsman. England will get bigger scores if he is at 5, in my opinion.
So, a lot of question marks over the England side. How do we think Australia did? Do you reckon they deserved to win the Test by 10 wickets? Do you reckon they performed higher or lower than their ability on that squad that they picked?
Some people performed well. I think Bancroft had an excellent innings in the second dig. And, the bowlers blew England away to an extent in the second innings. Nathan Lyon, I think, was perhaps the standout bowler for Australia. Therefore, he had excellent control and showed exactly what England are missing. And I was thinking before the test match, if he doesn't back up his words with his actions, he's going to look a bit of a mug. But he did that. He bowled well. Fantastic run out. So you can't discredit Lyon. Australia's tail wagged. Ours didn't. They obviously got a bit more going on for them in that respect. Australia aren't an amazing team. They're a very good team. And they're a better team than England. I would expect them to win the series. But I think that England might get a game or two.
The scoreline definitely flattered them, I think. I don't think a 10-wicket win reflected sort of how close the game was for 3.5 days. I think Stephen Smith essentially won Australia that test match, because if we'd got his wicket early on in that first innings, I think they were 76 for 4. If we'd had them down 100 for 5 with Steve Smith out, we would have won that test match. The problem is, he didn't look like getting out, did he?
No. And
none of our bowlers looked like getting him out. He looked so composed.
He'd still be batting, I think.
I watched quite a lot of his innings. Just because that's what I have time to do at 3 o'clock in the morning. He never looked like giving a chance at all. He was a complete and utter wall. And I think it's really worrying signs for the rest of the series if he's in that sort of form. Because it only takes a couple of other batsmen to get a couple of 50s around him, and he keeps on scoring big hundreds.
It's a strange shout, but I want to see Milan bowl at Smith. Milan wasn't used as a bowler at all. And he's hardly been used by Root as a bowler.
Is he off-spin?
He's off-spin, and he opens the bowling in T20s, Middlesex, and lots of T20 sides have a slow bowler opening now. But I'd like to see something different. Kevin Peterson looks infallible times as a batsman, then we discovered he had a weakness against the left-arm part-timer, and teams utilise that all around the world. Yuvraj Singh claims him on many occasions. So just try, throw the kitchen sink at Stephen Smith, because if you can find a weakness, if you can get into his head, then... you've done half the job, because players like Khawaja were out of form terribly. Hanscom didn't get any runs in the first match. Knows had a good start to his career, but if we can get him cheaply, then we're into the tail. So get Smith out, try whatever you can, whatever's going to work. We had the bump approach to him in this match, which again didn't look like getting out to, but didn't score off. That's a last resort for me. We went to that a bit too soon. I think top of off from the seamers, and try Milan as a bowler to him.
Yeah, I wouldn't really read that much into Australia's second innings. Obviously, it was big partnership between Bancroft and Warner.
Ever 10-wicket win.
Yeah, I think
they beat their own record by one.
I think the England players were sort of resigned to defeat by then, though. I know obviously there hadn't been that many sort of. I think that actually was like the sixth largest total ever chased at the Gabba. But I think the England players were sort of resigned to defeat after that batting collapse. So they obviously didn't bowl as well as they could have done. The only problem is, like I already touched upon, I can't see a weakness in Steve Smith. He shouldn't be good off his legs. His technique we should be able to bowl at his legs and get him LBW, but his hand-eye coordination is just unbelievable, that he just never seems to miss it. Every team has tried to do that to him and every team has failed. So I think we've tried everything else. I agree with what Joe was saying. Give Milan a chance. No one else has been able to do it, so give him a go.
I remember watching Steve Smith bat for the first time in the 2010 Ashes series, and I looked at him and thought, this guy's got nothing. He's not that good. He won't get very far. He'll be in for a year or two and then go. And I don't think anybody who watched him bat in that series would have predicted he would become the best batsman in the world to this extent.
No, so moving on, guys, before we go on to the second test match preview, I'm just going to touch on Johnny Bairstow and his headbutting greeting. We didn't do that when we met before for the first time, but how is that going to affect the series now?
I think the Australian players have definitely got into Johnny Bairstow's head. It's completely obvious from Cameron Bancroft's interview that the whole sort of scenario is comical. They've obviously made it out to be a big thing. They could easily have mentioned this at the start of the series, but they chose the exact right time to do it when the England players were under pressure.
It was 4 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Exactly. You saw Steve Smith in the interview couldn't contain his laughter. I think the Australian players are obviously trying to play these mind games. You saw Nathan Lyon's interview before the start of the first test, which was completely out of character for him. Alistair Cook had been saying that they were chatting to each other about their families before he even went into the press conference. So these Australian players are definitely trying to play mind games, and they're seemingly working at the minute.
And obviously with the issue around Ben Stokes Hales, this issue coming up again, it's giving a very negative light on the England cricket team at the moment. So Australia are definitely tapping into that. So we're going to go on to the second test preview. How do you think it's going to go, guys? Day-nighter, the first ever day-nighter in an Ashes series.
Well, obviously a lot of people have been beating this up as England's best chance to win a test match, and I think he's probably right. It probably is. The conditions are most suited to their bowling and their batting. And quite simply, it's not a very obvious thing to say, despite we're 1-0 down. If we don't win Adelaide, then the Ashes are gone. I think if we win Adelaide, then it's possible to perhaps win at the MCG, maybe. And if we could squeeze out a draw at the SCG, we might be able to get to go again with a 2-2 draw. But I just, very simply, it's a lot of onus is on Broadlanton. They'll know the pressure that's on them to bowl well with these conditions that are so favourable to them. And I think if Anderson has it, we talked about match winners earlier. Anderson can be a match winner in these conditions. He can really rattle Australia. He could blow away their top order potentially. And I think that if that happens, then England will win the match. And I think that it will also be more conducive to England's batting.
So what's your prediction then?
I'm going to be very bold and very optimistic and say a close England win.
So yeah, what about?
I wish I could be as optimistic. I think the problem that we've got, as with every England sporting team, is we go into a match saying the conditions are in our favour because, we did it with the Gabba. So the conditions are in favour because it's not as hot. It's only 25 degrees this time. And there's one cloud in the sky, so, we would get some swing out of that. We've only ever played one day-night test match before. We did well, but it was against a schoolboy side.
Who then beat us in the next match.
Who then beat us. Which said more about us, I think, in that match than about the West Indies. I mean, the momentum's with Australia. Steve Smith doesn't look like getting out, and I'm sure Stark and Cummings and Hazelwood, if our bowlers are going to be able to get anything out of the ball, I'm sure they'll be well-equipped to get something out of it too. So, for those reasons, I'd say a comfortable Australia win. I'd love to be proved wrong, but I think it'll be a comfortable Australia win.
Yeah, I'm actually going to agree with Joe. I think the media have been going on about how England might have the advantage and these conditions are going to favour them in the second test, but I actually think the opposite. I think the pink ball, as we've seen, tends to swing for a few overs and then for the rest of the time, does absolutely nothing. The ball softens up, doesn't do anything. There's no pace on the ball. That's going to play right into Stephen Smith and David Warner's hand. If we don't get Warner early, then he could go on and make a big score. I think he's done very, very well with the pink ball in the past. I think last Boxing Day, I think they played a test match with a pink ball and he scored 100 in the first session or something against Pakistan. So if we don't get him early, we could really, really struggle. And then also, obviously, when this ball softens up, we're going to need a bowler with pace, which, as we've already touched upon, we don't have. If Anderson and Broad aren't going to swing that ball, we've got no one who's going to take the game to Australia. Stark and Cummins can come in and bowl their bouncers, but England aren't going to be able to do that. So, yeah, I can't see anything other than another Australia win, to be completely honest.
So we've got two Australia wins and an England win, and I think Australia will win too. I'm a negative England fan. And yeah, that concludes today's show, this week's show. So thanks to my panel for that talk. I hope you've enjoyed it as well, listening to it. And the next test match starts on Saturday morning at 2:30. I think it's on BT Sport as well, and BBC TMS will be covering it as well. And we'll be back next week, probably with a similar panel and maybe a different host to mix it up with the second test review.